Oops, I can't do that. All right, here we go. Go live. And here we go. Desktop and down to the video. And here we go. Thank you all for Thank you all for joining. Today I have it's kind of a throwback to 2016, and the reason why I'm doing this is as I was just discussing with Darcy, I feel like I keep giving the same message. So I wanted to go back to 2016 and one of the last big speeches I gave on this topic to a group was in Texas in 2016, and the big topic, again, was Civilization Jihad. It was about my second book, Civilization Jihad and the Myth of Modern Islam. But before we get into that, I want to share, as this is a Christian news show, I want to share to you from the Word of God. This comes from Matthew 11, verses 1 to 6. And it came to pass when Jesus made an end of commanding his 12 disciples, he departed thence to teach and to preach in their cities. Now, when John had heard in the prison the works of Christ, he sent two of his disciples and said unto him, Are you he that should come, or do we look for another? Jesus answered and said unto them, Go and show John again those things which you do hear and see. The blind receive their sight, and the lame walk, the lepers are cleansed, and the deaf hear, the dead are raised up, and the poor have the gospel preached to them. And blessed is he, whosoever shall not be offended in me. Nowhere in Scripture is it said that you cannot question your faith. Nowhere in the Bible is it wrong to argue with God. You may be wrong, and that can be sinful by itself, but it is not wrong to talk to God and argue with him. It's never wrong. There's some great joy in that when you think about it. God wants to talk with you. It doesn't matter if you're mad, you're sad, you're happy. He still wants that personal communication with you. And it's never wrong to seek clarification. These are important things. John, the one Jesus shall soon stay, is the one that precedes the Messiah. That's in Malachi 3:1 and Malachi 4:5. And even he has doubts. Nowhere did Jesus question this or say it was wrong. Even though, again, it's likely that when these two were little, they met and knew each other because their mothers knew each other. Again, John had these doubts, and Jesus doesn't condemn those doubts. He welcomes them. He answers them two disciples of John return to share that the blind see, the deaf hear, the lame walk, the lepers are cleansed, even the dead are raised to life, and the gospel, the good news, is preached. What a message of testimony to return with. Can you imagine the smile on their faces? You know, these two disciples of John, here they are returning with a message of testimony of what they have seen with their own two eyes. The Messiah is here. You were right. A message that may have made them want to run and dance all the way. They returned to tell John the Baptist, their master, a message of hope. John had fulfilled his mission. What a statement. Dear Lord Jesus, you are far better than I am. I don't like complaints nor gripes, and I'm not as kind as you by far. I like being right, but I know it's good to be wrong as well. You don't complain when we question our faith. You respond with kindness and reassuring support in ways that tell us you just want to talk with us. You just want to hear us. Lord, your loving kindness goes beyond anything that I can even comprehend. Lord, I just ask that those listening, Lord, would hear this message today and find a reason to seek you. In your name, Lord Jesus, amen. Now, you know, this is a Christian news show, and I'm going to always be reading the Word of God. And if you have a desire to learn more, I have a few devotionals that are on Amazon. I used to call them deep dive devotionals, and my pastor said to me, "Look, if you call them deep dive, they're not going to sell as well. Yeah, they might be more detailed. Yeah, it might take you longer to get through a book, but the purpose of doing a devotional is to actually read the Word of God and do some study when you think about it. And that's what I'm providing for people. And I'm going through the book of Matthew right now. This will be, I think I have 9 books yet to publish on this. 9 books. I'm going through the Word of God. I'm going chapter by chapter through each book that I do. And I have, sometimes I pick a book. I usually go from one book in the New Testament and one book to the Old Testament when I complete. And sometimes God asks me to do the next book. All right. But I have to do what God asked. Now, again, if you're interested in supporting my ministry, that's one way, is to buy the books on Amazon. Now I'm going to pull up this presentation I have, and I'll apologize beforehand because I'm not going to be able to share well at times because I can't see the I won't be able to see the screen because I'm going to be looking at my notes. So what I would do when I went to do a presentation is I would leave. This presentation I'm sharing with you is from my presentation in Texas. And it was an amazing amount of people that showed up. I'd say between 100 and 200 people showed up in Texas to hear this message. And that's all thanks to Pastor Greg Young. And you know, there's a great man of God. He lives it. I mean, I visited, saw his family, his children. And his children they know what it means to live as a Christian through their father and mother's example. That is an incredible, incredible statement. Now, Civilization Jihad, I will say this. The best way to get this book is to go to paulsutliff.blogspot.com and go through my blog, and you will find some of them, there are pull-down menus to ordering the book. This book is out of print, and I am the only one who has copies. So you can go to Amazon, but you will not be able to order it. And the people who have it, who claim they have it, I've seen them put the book up as high as $800. Yeah. So the day this book went on sale, the very day this went on sale, somebody put the price up to $315. People were upset that this book was coming out. And I found that humorous. What? How could you do that on day one unless somebody to you this information? The publisher of the book actually went to jail. So that's another reason it's not available at, on Amazon. He stole all of our royalties. So the only royalties I get are from the books I purchased. And I have approximately 50 left. So that says something. So I'm hoping to, you know, travel and share, and we'll keep going. So let me tell you why I put this. This is the thing I leave up when I'm waiting for my when it's my opportunity. I put this up on the screen, and a lot of people start to talk about this. Well, that publisher, by the way, it's horrible that that happened. But the funny thing about that publisher, this is where I laugh. The publisher did actually targeted Christians, and he tried to get away with stealing from Christians. So the Attorney General of Oklahoma, I ended up talking with her. She was a fantastic woman. And she said, I don't get it. You Christians are all saying the same thing. I laughed. I said, I know what it is. I know what it is. And she says, everyone's saying I wouldn't want to be at the end of targeted Christian prayers. Yeah, and that's exactly what it was. So here's what happened. These guys, the father and the son, had gone to the wilds of Canada. They were hiding in a cabin. And the Mounties found them. And they handed them over to Oklahoma, who came and got them and prosecuted them and put them in jail. They lost at the trial. I don't know how many years they got. They might be out now. So this was published by Tate Publishing. They did an outstanding, I think they did great. The book cover was done by an artist that I hired, and I love the work that she did. And she was an outstanding talent to me. I have no artistic talent. She originally put the gentleman you see here in a green army suit. And I said, remove the green army suit, put a suit on him and a tie, and I'm happy.
Right.
And because that's what the civilization jihadi is. Might not right. wear that head covering, but the thing is, they're being secretive. And that's why I start this with Sun Tzu, from The Art of War. All warfare is based on deception. Hence, when we are able to attack, we must seem unable. When using our forces, we must appear inactive. When we are near, we must make the enemy believe we are far away. When far away, we must make him believe we are near. Sun Tzu was a genius. And let's go.
Definitely.
Okay, this is another one. Supreme excellence consists of breaking the enemy's resistance without fighting. These are really words of wisdom. The greatest victory is that which requires no battle. Isn't that kind of what we're experiencing today?
Oh, yeah, definitely, yeah.
So this is how, I mean, I always share, whenever I go talk, what got me into this, because it's the number one thing. When I go on to a new broadcast, they always want to know what got me into this. So Nazareth College is where I graduated and got my master's in education. Nazareth College received $500,000 from an organization called IIIT. IIIT is the International Institute for Islamic Thought. Okay, $500,000, you know, that's $500,000. They just got tossed that. And what did? They started an Islamic chair. Okay, so the guy who was brought in, there was only like one Islamic professor, and now he's getting extra money because of that. All right. And, you know, I had someone come to me and talk to me about this. Did you know that Nazareth got that money? I'm like, IIIT. I mean, that's what they like to call themselves, IIT. I keep thinking, I've heard that name before. And by the time I was told this, I was published in every Barnes & Noble in the United States. There was a book with my name in it. It was in the field of special education. And, you know, I could do that. I could take my kids to any Barnes & Noble. We tested it. We went to any Barnes & Noble. We could take a book off the shelf. See, there's Dad's name. And I was bragging about it. You know, that's bragging rights. Okay. So I was good at research. That's what got me into this. And I'm an avid reader. So I'm thinking, I've heard this name, IIIT. Okay. So I go and I do a little bit of research. Dr. Muhammad Shafiq is the guy behind this. Now, he went to Dr. Don Braidman, who was the president of Nazareth College, and he said, hey, let's apply for money from IIIT. Muhammad Shafiq had a relationship with IIIT. You're going to hear more. Okay. Muhammad Shafiq was the imam of the Westfall Mosque. On the Nazareth College site, he posted his CV or curriculum vitae or what we would call a resume today. And he brags that when he was doing his doctoral work, his advisor was Dr. Ismail Faruqi. Now, I don't know how many resumes you see where you see somebody bragging about who their doctoral advisor was. You know, I've reviewed over, I'd be saying somewhere between 50 and 100 doctoral type resumes. And the reason I've done that is as an educator serving on committees doing interviewing. And I have still only seen one person, this man right here, who mentioned who his doctoral advisor was. And there's a reason for that. See, Dr. Ismail Faruqi was one of the first guys to come to the United States to start a Muslim Brotherhood group, known as the Muslim Students Association. This is the first Muslim Brotherhood entity within the United States. So, you know, I did call the FBI. I did. Did you see this? Oh, we know who he is. They were shocked. I just want to make sure they knew this because they are, again, they're supposed to, I can't expect them to be informed on everything. They're like, they didn't know that connection. You know, why would I do that? Why would I connect it? Again, if I'm seeing this stuff, Ismail Faruqi helped start the IIIT group, okay? So now you see that connection. So IIIT comes along after Muslim Student Association has started. Now there's a relationship between MSA and IIIT as well. All right, let's keep going. And again, Dr. Ismail Faruqi came to this country through Canada. He came here from a country that he could not get into the United States. And, of course, he was a member of the Muslim Brotherhood. The Islamic Circle in North America, this is not in here, but Muhammad Shafiq received an award from the Islamic Circle of North America. And I believe it was 2018 when he received the award. So, again, he's well-known with the Muslim Brotherhood entities. Now, as time went on, the Muslim Student Association started a chapter at the University of Rochester. When you went online, you read everything about them. They have something unusual in their charter. It declared a relationship with the West Fall Road Mosque. Whoa! So, like, okay, it's not surprising. Wouldn't you want to, I mean, if you're the Muslim Brotherhood, wouldn't you want a connection to a mosque that's related to the Muslim Brotherhood? Well, yeah, full circle. I'm watching this happen. I'm like, again, that's part of the joy of loving research. I'm sorry, I love it. And at some point, you know, I'll offer to anyone, you see these arrows and things that I put up here. I have this huge, huge PDF file. And what I was doing is drawing in arrows, and I have pictures, and I have names and places and things that are relationships between terrorist groups. That's how I started compiling my research when I did my first book and the second book that I'm showing you here. I didn't understand a lot of how this was working because the relationships were what I would, you know, and I didn't know how to describe these relationships. And here I am, I'm reading David Galbitz's book, and it dawns on me how right his words are. He describes these relationships as incestuous. And I sit there and laugh. I says, nobody gave us a better word. Eric is unable to be here today. I believe he is, he has a meeting with his pastor today. He told me he wouldn't be here. So that's why you don't see him. Let's keep going here. So you see all these little connections, and you're going to see what I mean by, you know, a little ways down the road, we'll talk about incestuous. A person who works for MSA may end up being, let's say you're a Muslim Student Association and you're an officer in some way. All right, then you will become or may already be working for Triple IT in a different capacity. It may be but you won't be like vice president of Triple IT and a vice president of MSA. Okay, this is the kids. This, in many ways, is the adults. ISNA is the adult group of MSA, the Islamic Society of North America. All right. So as I started doing my research, I started looking at Taqiyya, and I called it the doctrine of deception. And now there are five Islamic words that have to do with lying. And Taqiyya, I think, is probably, actually, as much as I like to use this word, I think it's not the right term in most times. I think Kitman is the correct term for most of the lies that are being used. I would use that more often. But Taqiyya, I mean, this is, again, I found this meme and I thought it makes sense. So I'm keep getting told Islam means peace. I actually went. Dr. Shafiq would make a meeting. He'd go out and people would call me and say, hey, he's going out. He's going out again. They'll say, Sutliff, if you have to show up. So I show up. And in his speech, he says, Islam means peace. We get to the question and answer period. And this happened three different times, word for word, exactly the same. I think every time, after the first time, and he saw me show up again, and I asked the same question, he's shaking. The third time I show up, he doubles down. Again, I asked the same question. What did I ask? What does Islam mean in Arabic? Submission. So did you lie to everyone when you said it meant peace? Yeah. So if I don't submit to you, are you going to kill me? No answers? Quiet all of a sudden. And these are questions I would ask. And so the third time he did this, I've never been so angry that I couldn't. I can talk for hours. But the third time I was so angry, I lost my ability to speak. Why was I angry? Here's the reason. And somebody motivated him to say this. And this is a problem. He said, Islam means the same thing as shalom. Okay, I have 12 undergraduate credits in Hebrew. I have 4 graduate credits in Hebrew. And I was just so disgusted. Here we have a man using his title as Professor Emeritus to get speaking opportunities. I wrote to the college. Please revoke. I mean, okay, so the college we're talking about. I was a member of the International Honor Society for Educators. I not only got into that, I led that group. So when I say I left and I graduated, I could call and I would get some respect because of that. All right? And I was so angry. We had a guy going around using his professional stance as a professor to lie to the public. How dare he say Islam means the same thing as peace? And this is where I still get angry. Thinking that somebody could say this. And what really bothered me is people were willing to accept it because he was a college professor. And who was I? I was the guy telling him everybody was a liar and making him prove that he was a liar. So if you think shalom means submission, something's wrong with you. Again, he's the one who said it actually meant. He said it meant submission. I didn't tell him that. That's the joy in doing this. Three times we did that. I'm going to skip this. So I'm going to put my notes just for a second. So I don't want to miss anything I would have said. All right. So we were under an attack, and we still are under an attack by an unrecognized enemy in the United States. We have nothing that declares the Muslim Brotherhood a terrorist front. That is problematic. Why? Al-Qaeda is the child of the Muslim Brotherhood. Hamas is the child of the Muslim Brotherhood. The Islamic State is the child of Al-Qaeda. That makes them the grandchild of the Muslim Brotherhood. Every single Islamic terror group that exists today is the child of the Muslim Brotherhood. And it's been, I mean, over and over and over again. Now, if you see what I'm looking at here, this bridge is the Chesapeake Bay Bridge support structure, okay? And this woman got out of a car with a MTA officer watching. She gets out and she starts to take pictures in a full burqa, headgear, everything. And she takes some pictures of this. It's 2001. What's going through your head if you hear this, you see this? In 2001, 9/11 had happened. They're now taking, you see someone in a full burqa taking pictures of the support bridge of, this is before, I mean, this is before even Christmas. Someone's out there now taking pictures of another place. Would you be thinking they're planning on bombing us? So that the genius, this police officer, we owe him an entire debt of thanks because of his great way of handling this. I'll tell you, it's the front line, these great police officers doing this front line work that make us safer. Now, I love what he did. He did a traffic stop, pulled the woman over, okay. But you know who was driving? Her husband. And he was wanted by the FBI for questioning. He just did a traffic stop. He helped things go along. He helped the guy who was avoiding the FBI to be found. But because she was taking pictures of this support structure, they now had a reason to go and investigate their house. Here's where things get interesting. In their house, they found out a hidden basement. Now, this is where it gets really interesting. A hidden sub-basement. Now, and just, okay. All right. In the sub-basement, and again, it was actually dug. So somebody went and took a shovel. I don't know how many years or how long it took them to dig this out and create another sub-basement underneath the concrete floor. And they found this, and in there was hundreds of boxes, no, 93 bankers' boxes of documents from the Muslim Brotherhood within North America. And one of them stood out. It's this one. It was published in 1991. It's called the Explanatory Memorandum of the Muslim Brotherhood of North America. I'm going to read to you just one small piece. Understanding the role of the Muslim Brotherhood in North America. The process of settlement is a civilization jihadist process with all the word means. The Ikhwan, which means their work in America, is a kind of grand jihad. In eliminating and destroying the Western civilization from within and sabotaging its miserable house by their hands and the hands of the believers, so that it is eliminated and God's religion is made victorious over all other religions. Without this level of understanding, we are not up to this challenge and have not prepared ourselves for jihad yet. It is a Muslim's destiny to perform jihad and work wherever he is and wherever he lands until the final hour comes. And there is no escape from that destiny except for those who choose to slack. But would the slackers and the Mujahideen be equal? Again, the Muslim Brotherhood in North America wrote this. This is not coming from Sudan. It's not coming from Saudi Arabia. It's not coming from the Israeli occupied zone known as Palestine, where people calling themselves refugees don't allow Jews to really, you know, have any freedom. That, to me, is where apartheid exists. This was coming, who had come to America for the purpose of subversion. And they say it right here. So my question now is, has the Muslim Brotherhood learned from Sun Tzu? Okay. Sun Tzu said the supreme art of war is to subdue the enemy without fighting. The Muslim Brotherhood civilization jihad is modeled on these very words. America has an enemy that wishes to destroy it without lifting a finger in an act of aggression. So do we know this enemy? I don't know if everybody can see. Yeah. So the president of the United States. Let me go back before I get into this. There was a petition on whitehouse.gov during Obama's day asking, and you can see it's right above, it says declare the Muslim Brotherhood organization a terrorist group. There was about 60 to 80,000, I cannot remember how many people signed that petition to get a response from the White House. And they promised they would respond. They didn't respond that week. They didn't respond the next month. About 3 to 6 months later, and they write this. We have not seen credible evidence that the Muslim Brotherhood has renounced its decades-long commitment to nonviolence. Here's the problem. Is that even close to being true? It's not historical truth. Not when we look at the 1928 Muslim Brotherhood motto, which is still in effect today. Allah is our objective. The Quran is our constitution. The Prophet is our leader. Jihad is our way, and death for the sake of Allah is the highest of our aspirations. That's what Hassan al-Banna led the Muslim Brotherhood with. The Quran is our constitution. The Prophet is our leader. Jihad is our way. Death, martyrdom for the sake of Allah is, you know, it has to make you think. Again, how well did the White House know this? You know, they said they were nonviolent. Were they lying? Well, in 1943, the Nizam al-Qas, by the way, there's an important book coming out on Nizam al-Qas. I had the opportunity to index this book. Let me tell you, this book will be a mind blower. So watch for a book. I think it's called Nizam al-Qas, The Secret Apparatus, it might be called. This is a must buy book. It should be out this fall. Watch for it. It is a mind number. The details, the incredible amount of research that went into this book, It is an absolute, absolute must buy. I'm hoping to have the author on in the fall when the book comes out. I'm so excited. And the cool thing is knowing the publisher, because the publisher contacted me to do this, I actually know another person who writes for them, and I'm kind of excited. So, yeah. 1946. Think about this. The assassination of the Egyptian minister Amin Othman. Does that sound nonviolent? Assassination. March 1948, assassination of Judge Ahmad Khazandar. Really? Obama, is that nonviolent? December 1948, assassination of Prime Minister Nakrashi. Okay. Obama considers this nonviolent. All right.
We're silencing the people that know the truth.
Yeah. Here's the thing. There was a lot more. Got Nasser, encourages nationalism, the Muslim Brotherhood attempt his assassination. Nasser, one of the first leaders of Egypt after it became independent. Nasser and Sadat were members of the Muslim Brotherhood. They got into power because of the Muslim Brotherhood, not because of anything else. It was because they were part of the Muslim Brotherhood. And then you see a coup in Sudan. And how is a coup nonviolent? Okay. 1979-80, attacks by the Muslim Brotherhood in Syria. How are attacks nonviolent? Attempts to assassinate a President Assad in Syria. How is that nonviolent? 1981, a car bomb. Ooh, now, you really want me to believe Obama can't tell that a car bomb is not, maybe it's pretty. I don't, car bombing? I still can't figure out. It killed 64 people, and Obama says that's nonviolent. It wounded 135. How many people have to die before he says it's violent? How many people have to be wounded? But that's nonviolent. The Hamas Charter was written in 1987. Now, if you read the Hamas Charter, it has very violent intention. It states it is a chapter of the Muslim Brotherhood. Again, another, that's the child. This is one of those organizations I mentioned earlier, one terrorist organizations. It says it's the child, a chapter of the Muslim Brotherhood. 1989, Hamas kidnaps two IDF soldiers, Israeli Defense Forces soldiers, and kills them. This was such a horrific act. And they wouldn't give back their bodies. When I actually started speaking on some of this, I was only uncovering a small amount. Yet, we had a president going around saying, they're nonviolent. We had attacks on the terrorism industry in 1992. Muslim Brotherhood leader group in 1993, a Muslim Brotherhood leader of the group that attacked the terrorism industry in Egypt, aka the Blind Sheikh, who was also a schemer behind the first World Trade Center bombing. 1994, Hamas attacks and kills 48 and wounds over 100. Hamas attacks, and again, when I gave this speech, 2016. The amount of Hamas attacks since 2016, there's no way you can count them. You know, when I wrote in the book, I'd have to have a whole other book just on Hamas, which I may do in the future. I don't know. They're one of the most violent organizations to exist today.
And they need to be exposed over and over again.
Yeah. And we have the Jewish Voice for Palestine, JVP, who tells everybody they're great. Yeah. The funny thing is, Andrew Herod, who often goes and reports on their actions and activities will tell you. These people are not Jewish. They will claim to be, but they don't know. They don't know what it means to be a Jew. They have no clue. They might claim they have a cultural connection. There's no heart connection. There's no faith connection. That's not being Jewish. So he'll say they're not Jewish. And I agree 100%. 2001. This is the part that should get every American angry that Obama defended. Obama defended the Muslim Brotherhood. And the German Muslim Brotherhood provided support to 9/11 terrorists. That's in the 9/11 report. There's no way he didn't know that. It's not possible. Oh, it goes more. Hamas attacks on 2002, killed 46 in 5 days and wounded almost 200. 2013, a bloody fight in Egypt as a coup restores order through the Egyptian army taking over. 2013, the murder of police and citizens when the Muslim Brotherhood led a revolt against police station. That was a horrible, horrible, bloody event. And it was so bad that Sisi was so angry he couldn't express himself properly. And it frustrated him. 2014, Hamas fired thousands of rockets at Israel and attacked Israelis from tunnels. Nonviolent, according to past President Obama. Or we could say, Biden. Nonviolent. So I'm going to come to the next slide, and I'm going to ask you, how real is the threat of the Muslim Brotherhood in 2016? How real was that threat? So just a second, I have to share I have to stop sharing this, and I have to pull up a video. All right. So as much as I talk, sometimes I think what I'm going to share is important. I think sometimes, oh, great, and I can't show them. This is going to be a problem. Okay, so let me put them up. I'll put the video up, and I'll play it off my screen. Here we go. Just a second. We will show them in a different way. You know, there's always more than one way to skin a cat, I say. Mm-hmm. So here we go. Just pull this over here. Come on. Come on. Let me pull this, please. All right. I have a way to do this. And I just have to pull this out. All right. All the joys of trying to do things. My video software editing stuff didn't work the way I wanted it to. And I was just talking to Darcy about it beforehand. And this is this is just an example of it. I apologize. Let's see. That is this one. All right. So I'm just going to go share my screen. We're going to beat this somehow. Your audio. Okay. And please work. And it didn't come up where I want it to.
Oh.
Come on. It's not letting me. Let's hit. Try this one more time. Just a second. All right. I know what to do this time. We are going to beat this.
Yes, we are.
Okay. And it's not letting. How do I beat this? I'm going to switch screens. Just a second. Oh, the joy of fighting. Fighting the system. All right. Stop screen. Share. Share screens. We're going to share this one. Share. Okay. Oops, I got to go back. It didn't work. Then push the right button. You have to hit that share the sound button. Okay, we're getting there. All right.
Yay!
All right. I didn't get to edit. I apologize.
بعد الاجتماعات المتتالية مع الثوار في الميادين قررنا مع جميع حركات العقاب الثوري ما يلي: 1. إعطاء فرصة لجميع الرعايا الأجانب من جميع الجنسيات الأجنبية والعربية والإفريقية وجميع موظفي الشركات العاملة لمغادرة البلاد فورا، وتنتهي هذه المهلة بنهاية يوم 11 فبراير 2015، وبعدها سيكونون محل استهداف من حركات العقاب الثوري، لذا جرى التحذير.
You are hereby warned. You see that? Secondly, all foreign companies operating on Egyptian soil have an opportunity until February of 20th to withdraw all their franchise from Egypt and terminate their operations. To withdraw all, otherwise all their projects may be targeted by the rebels. This is a Muslim Brotherhood station. Third, all foreign nationals working in embassies, diplomats, and ambassadors have an opportunity to leave the country until February 28th. Again, 2016, I'm talking about. Fourth, all tourists who wish to come to Egypt must cancel their trips. So they were going to attack American tourists, Muslim Brotherhood. They are not welcomed on Egyptian soil in these difficult days. Look at the four Rabia sign in the corner. Fifth, all the countries that provide material and political support to the coup must stop the support immediately within a month from the communique. Otherwise, all their interest in the countries of the Middle East will be subject to harsh attacks with dire consequences. This concludes the communique. Everybody must adhere to its terms. There will be no concessions or show of mercy because all parties are competing in the violation of our honor, our property. They have all cooperated in the killing of the innocent and the raping of women, the arrest of thousands of people, the displacement of millions of families, and the unjust plundering of the money of the people. And this was in Egypt. It's a statement made by the Muslim Brotherhood. I mean, that to me, to say in 2016 that there was no threat, that's a problem. All right. So here's what I did with this book. And I've got to hit stop sharing and go back to the screen and share again. Oh, the joy of all the little steps to do. All right.
Okay. You'll get it.
Yeah. Again, we'll find more than one way to skin it, the cat, unfortunately. All right. You know, and I want you to think about this. That was 2016 when this guy came out on a Muslim Brotherhood TV station, broadcast at the time in Egypt, and they were threatening to attack all tourists who were foreigners. Just the kind of nonviolent thing you want done, right?
Right. It just doesn't make sense. They don't care who they attack.
Yeah, okay. I have a clue as to who that comment about the Convention of States is, but I'm just going to leave that alone. So here's how I divided this up. Civilization Jihad is in colleges, and that's how it went there first. They did that because they found out that their influence in Egypt expanded exponentially, and they actually grabbed the presidency in Egypt because they went into the college. Oh, they controlled the professors. Oh, if it worked for them, what do you think it would do when they come over to another country and try it? So this is how they started to grow their power base. Now, when they're going to another Islamic country, they didn't necessarily have to go through that lineage. But they learned if they did that, it's much more powerful. That's the crazy truth. So I found this interesting. Then you get, again, lying practitioners, or lying practicing Muslim professors. And you'll see this. Professors endorsing Hamas. There's documents of this. Middle East Forum documents it. Students for Justice in Palestine. We're going to mention all these things. This is just the beginning. Yeah, next slide. All right. So let's talk about the Students for Justice in Palestine. It was started by people who are members of Hamas. Strong arm tactics. They had no problems with assaulting Jewish people, Jewish students. It was okay. They were getting in trouble for it. Behind the BDS movement. They're the ones who created it here in the States. Boycott, divest, and sanction. It didn't come from the Muslim Student Association. It came from Hamas. Their influence in colleges. That's where it came from. And then we get to that incestuous relationship with MSA. So you have a president of the Muslim Student Association. He would be the vice president of the SJP. President might be the treasurer, or he might be the president of the, again, if he was a vice president of MSA, he might be the president of the SJP. All right, they change positions. That's why they, and you'll see this actually still exists today with SJP and MSA, wherever they are. And you'll, it doesn't change. And that's important to understand. Again, MSA is Muslim Brotherhood. Hamas is a chapter of the Muslim Brotherhood. SJP is Hamas. There is so many proven connections to this. There's no reason for any chapter of MSA to be allowed on a college campus today. There's no reason for SJP to be allowed on any college campus today. When this is documented, not only by people like me, but it's documented in records that can be used in court of law. That's hard to follow. So I picked on Texas, and I shared some events. Now, again, I did this presentation in the summer of 2016. But on November 13th, 2015, the UT Austin Palestine Solidarity Committee disrupted an Israeli Studies Department event hosted by Professor Ami Pedazar and featuring a visiting scholar from Stanford University. They refused to either participate or leave and instead hurled insults and chants of "Long live the Intifada." Really? How is that nonviolent, President Obama? Just saying that, "Long live the Intifada," do you consider that nonviolent? Because those very words are a statement of violence. He's serving his third term right now as O'Biden. Let's talk about civilization jihad in public schools. And this next one is a video, which is mind-numbing. And all right, so I'm just going to hit escape. All right, so I can play this, and we have to play the game. All right. Let me get the right screen up here. Oh, the joy of playing. All right, share screen. Make sure the audio's on. This one is a mind number. When I saw this, I don't know.
Between good grades or religion, students in Waterbury won't now have to make that decision.
That's right. Tonight, the Board of Ed decided to recognize two Muslim holidays. If they saw both of them following the story from the very beginning, they have a new development.
Well, starting next school year, this elementary school, along with all the other schools in the Waterbury School District, we'll be honoring two of the Muslims' most holy days by not scheduling major events, tests, or field trips on those days.
Peace of mind for the children.
is offered for the children. It started with more than 300 signatures on a petition in a South Pole circle. Tonight, the Waterbury Board of Education voted to honor June Muslim Holy Day. Growing up in Waterbury myself, going to school, I myself missed a trip because of my holiday. I had to choose my faith, and I didn't go to a trip, but this is the third grade at Washington. Bob has four children, and he is happy that the new generation of Muslims coming up through the Waterbury School District won't have to choose between exams and religious beliefs, which is the point of tonight's vote. When we were approached with this request, so we thought about it and honored it. Yeah, tonight is not about a day off. They're not going to come in and shut down the school for two Muslim holidays. They say, however, that memo that will go out in the water at the beginning of the year, I talked to the school superintendent about it, and she says the idea is to show respect for their culture.
The sensitivity memo that will be distributed throughout the district to staff and to principals to be sensitive to the holidays, Muslim holidays, and to be sensitive with regards to assessments and major events that happen within the school district.
Now, Waterbury is leading the way on this one. We talked to some people in the Muslim community. They say they don't believe there's anything else like this in the state. We're in Waterbury. Bob Wilson, News 8. Hi.
What I like about the way this was done is that was the correct, the district superintendent actually got it right the way she said things. I was vastly impressed with the way she tackled it. She never once said she was going to honor Muslim holidays. Not once. That's important to understand. What she did was talk about respect. Respect's not a bad thing. Honoring's quite another. They don't honor Christian holiday of Christmas. No, they stole it from us. Now it's called winter holiday. They don't have any respect. So, wait a minute. You can respect a Muslim holiday, but you can't respect a Christian holiday? You can't call it Easter vacation anymore.
Really?
No. You go to a school calendar, it'll say something else. It's a spring vacation. They don't call it Easter anymore. And they removed, I mean, that's just, this is the stuff that gets you thinking. Why is that fair? These are things that you find. And again, after having done this kind of stuff, I don't know how long, there's a echo. It shouldn't be from me. I have a directional mic, so I'll return down that sound a little bit. Thank you. Okay. I'm going to make this a little bit larger, and I'll explain why I did this. There are a lot of charter schools throughout the United States. A good many of them are run by one man, the Gulen of the Gulen Group. Now, oh yeah, okay, that makes sense. So I'll turn off my mic when I do the video next time. All right. Actually, I probably won't because I'll turn down the sound a little bit. All right. Gulen owns a ton of charter schools. Because I did this in Texas, I highlighted what was in Texas that were Gulen schools. You can actually find this information easily. There are organizations that do research on the Gulen group, all right, the Gulen bunch of charter schools. The Gulen charter schools require their teachers to pay them back for having their jobs. So they have to give kickbacks. And here's one of the problems. The vast majority of the teachers are foreigners and have heavy, thick accents. I'm not saying they can't teach. I'm saying they have problems communicating sometimes. In the United States, they don't hire they do not predominantly hire Americans for these jobs. And who they hire? Turks, people from Turkey or people who have come here from Turkey, but they do not, in general, hire your average American. This is problematic. Where do they take these kids on special trips? Guess where? It's Turkey. Oh, where is the seat of the Muslim Brotherhood today? Is it in Egypt? No. Could it be Erdogan's Turkey? Pretty much. All right. Let me go on. Okay. Now, this is a little news story. And Austin High School, it says, excited to offer Arabic the one for the 2016-2017 school year. Current AHS students can also learn more in Arabic club. Really? When you start to think about this, when people come to your country, they've taken out the concept of adaptation and integration. There is nothing like that anymore on the refugee concept, federal refugee pages, all right? Refugee resettlement program, they actually have removed all those terms. So this particular program is at the International High School in Austin, Texas, the Burnett Middle School in Austin, Texas, the Pflugerville High School in Pflugerville, Texas, the Hendrickson High School in Pflugerville, Texas, with the Arabic flagship program at the University of Texas in Austin, Arabic Immersion Magnet School in Houston. Again, I'm just picking on Texas because I did this speech in 2016. Now, think about your city. Now, do some research. Guess what you find? The organization I'm talking about that's responsible for all this has connections to, could it be the Muslim Brotherhood? Absolutely. Okay. So now we have the pledge being said in Arabic. You'll find stories of that. Kids singing Allah's praises in choirs in your public schools, but they're not allowed to sing about Jesus. Holocaust denial assignments are being given out. Share something on that in a minute. And
kicked me off. I'm new from survivors.
Okay.
Some of those camps.
Now, I'm going to talk about this news story. I got to stop sharing and get back to the video the way it worked last time. So I'll tell you one of my issues with this story is because of my background as an educator, I knew who was behind this story. So I'm going to share this video that was done. And every single person that watched this video was disgusted that this actually happened. And there's a good reason for it. Let me just pull this up. Okay. And come on, let me... The joy. Come on, where is it? The joy of not being able to get to where I want to go. All right. This is the joy of fighting. Yeah, you have to do things in a certain way. Oh, boy. We are definitely going to share this. Share screen. Share system. And I'm going to mute my mic so everybody can hear this. And it's this one. All right. And here we go. Well, that's not it. Sorry. Got the wrong one. That's the wrong one. Sorry. Come on. It's this one. There's 24.
Documented genocide the world has ever seen. 6 million Jews murdered by the Nazis in the Holocaust. Yet this homework assignment in Rialto asks middle school students to debate whether it actually happened.
Yes, it was presented to kids in Rialto. It was a travesty.
Right. tried by Cooper and others at the Museum of Tolerance in Los Angeles are outraged by the assignment, asking any creators to cite credible sources on both sides. The first page states some people claim the Holocaust is not an actual event, but instead a propaganda tool created for political and monetary gain.
The word credible just jumped right out of the page. And later on, you have the Holocaust as a hoax. You even have a section called Trans Flight as a Fraud.
This was a mistake. It should be corrected. It will be corrected.
The 18-page project completed in April was created by a group of district educators as an exercise in critical thinking. Initially, school officials defended the assignment, but following a firestorm of criticism, quickly changed its tune.
We all know the Holocaust is not a hoax. We need to make sure that when we teach this in the Reaction Class School District, we teach it with sensitivity and compassion. And I believe our classroom teachers, they are teaching it with sensitivity and compassion.
The anti-defamation league that led the opposition called the project poorly thought out, but is satisfied the district is now revising the assignment going forward with sensitivity for the millions of Holocaust victims who lost their lives.
We're not continuing that they decided to do this, but this was motivated by malice or anything like that. We think it's more just a case of a misguided application of bad educational strategy.
Pedagogically, socially, morally, and thus.
Both the rabbi and the ADL for submitting the Holocaust only gives validity to anti-Semitic haters. And the rabbi, by the way, has invited the Rialto School District to come down to the Museum of Colony for a history lesson. The district told me today that a trip is already being planned in the coming weeks. Back to you, Mr. Yeah.
Unbelievable.
So there's more to this story. Oh, sorry. There is more to this story. I wrote to the author of this story where I first saw it. He had done a lot of research. But because he didn't work in education, he didn't know the game. He didn't know who was really at fault. The time that this was going on, there was an interim superintendent, and you'll never guess what his first name was, Darcy. You think you know?
I think, wasn't he in that one?
Well, no, I bet you know his first name. Just say his first name. What do you think his first name was?
I can't think right
Starts
now.
Starts with M.
Mohammed. Mohammed?
Yeah. His first name was Mohammed. I looked at that. So I talked to the guy who was trying. He actually did a lot of research to find out who was behind this. Who approved this? So he went to the person who's in charge of the social studies department. He says, no, I never approved this. Okay. He went to the guy in charge of curriculum. No, I never approved this. He went to the assistant superintendent. I never approved this. I said, there's only one other person who could get this out. He says, I wish I knew that beforehand, before I published. So who was left? Mr. Muhammad.
Principal?
Yeah. No, no, the district superintendent whose name was Muhammad. Now, he put this out. He forced this on children to be told that the Holocaust is thought to be a hoax. And this is the kind of stuff they want taught in your public schools. Of course, I make sure wherever I teach this that, again, the author, he's mentioned in my book, Civilization, Jihad, and the Myth of Modern Islam. I mention that. Now, there's a reason why I do that, because this author, he shared important information with me that allowed me to share who was really behind this. And just because, I mean, he couldn't determine who the real guy was behind it. The only way he couldn't determine it was just because, it's solely because he didn't work in education. And, you know, some things are what we call game playing. And in education, there's a lot of game playing. Oh, nobody wants to take responsibility for something. But the truth is, a lot of times it's there, it's in public, and every teacher knows who's behind something a lot of times. It doesn't take long to figure it out. Who had the authority? There was only one. See, the social studies department chair had to approve it. And if he's not approving it, then somebody above him has to approve it. So who's left? The big cheese. The big honcho. I mean, that's Rialto, California. And people would get so mad whenever I point this out. I think there's another, I've got a few more things on this. Just a second. I want to go to the, right. Nope. Okay. Here we go. And I'll get this back over there. The joy of putting things together and having things work. Here we go. Go back to the slides. And we'll go back to the, okay. And I did that wrong. Okay. We're still playing. All right. Civilization Jihad. How about trips to mosques? What they were doing is taking children on trips to mosques during the school day, calling it a multicultural visit. Of course, they wouldn't visit a church or a synagogue. No, they go to mosques. And the imams would lead their children in the Shahada. Is this wrong? The children didn't know what they were doing. Think about it. Yeah, this stuff was frustrating to no end. And there's a lot of records of this course. That's okay. This stuff is just mind-numbing. Okay. Allowances in Canada for an imam to give a Juma prayer service in school during school hours. So they said there's so many Muslim children here, they shouldn't have to leave school to go to Juma prayers. Okay. You know, I kind of get the concept. If you feel that it's so important, you have to take your children out of school every Friday. Well, do you think they'll do that during high school? No. Why not? Children don't have to leave the school. No. In fact, they don't have to go to these. Again, there are allowances. This was just trying to exert Islamic power. And the imam would come in. No one who was not Muslim was allowed into this room. The amount of supervision for those children, we still have a lot of questions there. Were there school staff members in there? There's a lot of activity here that is not exactly legal. So, can't happen. I mean, this is the stuff that really can't happen. Now, you know, when I wrote this back in 2016, Civilization, Jihad, and Public Schools, Islam and Textbooks, report by the American Textbook Council. And I have since done many other things exposing these evils. I didn't expect that in 2022 I'd be doing a 20-part series with Usama Dakdok called The Lies in the Textbooks. Yeah, it was an outstanding series. You can find links to all of those videos on paulsutliff.blogspot.com. So let's talk about this. Misinformation about Islam more pronounced in junior high school textbooks than high school. Again, this is by the American Textbook Council. Outright textbook errors about Islam are not the main problem. The more serious failure is the presence of disputed definitions and claims that are presented as established facts. You want to find out? I keep saying this over and over again. You want to find out if your children's textbook is full of lies about Islam? All you have to do is go to the glossary in the back of your child's world history textbook and look up this word, D-H-I-M-M-I, DHIMMI. If it says protected people, that book is full of lies. I can't tell you how many textbooks I have seen with this deceitful piece of garbage in it. and it still gets me angry today. Sorry. Islamic activists use multiculturalism and ready-made American political movements, especially those on campus, college campuses I'm talking about, to advance and justify the makeover of Islam-related textbook content. Now, the real reason behind this, yes, is this is the Institute on Religion and Civic Values. Now, they call themselves IRCV. Now, if you type in IRCV, I'm going to show my screen here so you can see this. Let me just pull up another. This will blow your mind. Two screens up here. So this is what's... I'm going to hit stop sharing for a second and come back and share again. All right. So this is the joy of internet usage. Here we go. Share, share screen, and pick this. Now I'm going to go right here. All right. So I type in IRCV.org. Watch where it takes me. Oh, they changed it again. Come on, so Institute of Religion and Civic Values. I just did this earlier today, or yesterday when I was preparing. Oh. Do you guys see what it says for the web address? It says IRCV, but the web address is CIE.org. You want to know why? That's the Council on Islamic Education. And these are the guys who improve your textbooks that say they're okay to be put into print. There's nothing wrong with these textbooks. And so anything written about Christianity is approved by the followers of Islam. Anything written about Judaism is approved by the followers of Islam. Anything written about the followers of Buddhism, the followers of Hinduism, is approved by the followers of Islam. Anybody see a problem with this? And if you're questioning anything I'm saying, you go to About Us. And it talks about IRCV and their religious pluralism and all that. Oh, they took out their connection to the Council on Islamic Education. But how did we get to this site? CIE.org. Oh, Council on Islamic Education. Interesting. Some things you just sit there and go, oh. You have to laugh. You have to laugh. All right. And we'll come back. Share screen. Some of these things you just have to see to believe. CIE, the Council on Islamic, we'll go back. The Council on Islamic Education is where that site was. That's just crazy. All right. Let's talk about civilization jihad through society, immigration, the Al-Hijra. Now, I apologize. This is I had this fixed yesterday. All right. Now, Muhammad said, this is from a hadith reported by Timri, and I'll come back. Kitab al-Mathal, hadith number 17344. Muhammad said, I charge you five of what Allah has charged me with, to assemble, to listen, to obey, to emigrate, and to wage jihad for the sake of Allah. So immigration is connected to what? What was that? Did it say jihad? Was it an Islamic source? Absolutely. This is called primary sources for you people. What am I saying? I'm saying, listen, social studies teachers are all about using primary sources. Oh, let's take a look. Then we have Quranic verses that state, migrate before the jihad. Surah 2, 218, surely those who believed and those who emigrated and performed jihad. Surah 872, surely those who believed and those who emigrated and performed jihad. Oh, now catch this. With their money and their lives for the sake of Allah. Oh. And those who believed and emigrated, this is Surah 874, and performed jihad for the sake of Allah. Oh. And those who gave asylum and help gave you victory, those are the true believers. Surah 875. And those who believed afterwards and emigrated and performed jihad with you, so those are of you. Does it sound like you really want them emigrating to your country when this is part of their faith structure? I didn't write this. They did. It's in the Quran. I recommend you buy this particular book. It's called The Generous Quran. It is translated by Usama Dakdak. And again, I highly, highly recommend it. Okay. Now, yeah, so now I'm going to play another video and the joy of getting things done right. I have to get out of here. I have to, all right, let's go back and share screen. This is a video I'm going to be playing from Sean Hannity. And here we go. Share screen, share system audio. And here we go. Oh, hold on a second. I didn't mute myself, so. All right, we'll do this again.
Pressing concern about a Muslim becoming president of the United States, we decided to launch a special Hannity investigation to find out if American Muslims think that Sharia law should supersede the U.S. Constitution. Earlier today, we sent out Fox News contributor David Webb to an Islamic cultural center in New York City. Now watch this closely.
Your thoughts, should Sharia law supersede the U.S. Constitution?
No, but I think the Sharia law is made by God, by Allah. And the Constitution is made by people. So it's not the same.
You believe that Sharia law should be above the U.S. Constitution?
Yes. Sharia law is completely different than the United States Constitution. As a Muslim, you practice my Islamic law. As a Muslim, United States Constitution, as a citizen, I respect the Constitution. Nothing to do with Sharia law. As a Muslim country, Sharia law is allowed. Other countries, no. You have to write Constitution.
Should any religious law supersede the U.S. Constitution at any time? Any denomination?
Maybe in the future. The U.S. Constitution deserves all the people living in the U.S. their rights, right? The Sharia law doesn't contradict with this. Sharia law just protects our dignified. We are like human beings. Be respectful. We respect the society.
So you think that the U.S. Constitution should be the law of the land in the U.S.?
Also helpful to protect our Sharia.
Should Sharia law be over the U.S. Constitution?
Yes. Every country has a different policy and different law, but I respect the law in any country ever.
Do you believe that the tenets of Sharia law should be over the U.S. Constitution?
No. But the U.S. Constitution, which is made by people, the Sharia law is made by Allah. So that is the all the way above. That has to be definitely in the land, not for the American, for the whole world, would be above.
So that should be above the U.S.
Definitely.
Constitution?
Yes. Joining me now is Reaction Syndicated radio talk show host out of Boston, Howie Carr, the author of Demystifying Islam, Tackling the Tough Questions, the national spokesperson for the Ahmadiyya Muslim community, Harris Zafar, and Fox News contributor David Webb. We have a significant number, and by the way, this backs up a poll that came out last year that even a majority of Muslims in America think that Sharia should supersede the Constitution.
Yeah, and there was no problem getting these questions and answers from these folks. You saw a wide variety of them. We gave them a chance to answer. The problem, and I have this problem with anyone, anywhere who believes it, any religious belief supersedes the U.S. Constitution. We're a nation where the Constitution guarantees your religious freedom, and where your religion does not trump it. Most people believe that in America, there are Muslims who want to live here and live under our Constitution, but too much we find a growing number of them that believe Sharia should supersede the U.S. Constitution, and one there, if you look in other countries, it's Sharia, but look at those countries where Sharia is the law.
Mr. Safari, while you are a minority in the Muslim community in many ways, and more liberal-minded in your views, generally speaking, we know the application of Sharia renders or relegates women and minorities and other religious faiths to second-class citizens. So that's just a fact that when you look at the application of Sharia in Muslim countries. So if you have more than half of Muslims in America that want Sharia, they are basically saying they don't support the U.S. Constitution, where you have freedom of religion and freedom of expression.
Now, what surprises me, the reason this surprises me, because the most fundamental principle in Islam on this subject is that the law of the land supersedes all the laws. And the verses in the Quran that talk about government do not specify any religious involvement. They say put your trust in those that are in authority.
Come on. Oh, there. All right. Surprised anybody? Anyone surprised? I hope you all saw that. Yeah. Anybody surprised? I hope you all heard that. It's quite a powerful statement where they say Sharia should be the law of the land. And to think that that is a thought process. You know, when I started looking at this and I saw these things, I'm thinking, this, can people actually think this way? I mean, it's one thing to talk about it, but to actually put this up and to say this is true and this is what people think, that's a problem. It just sounds so wrong, no matter how you look at it. So let me tell you about this book I did, this second book, The Civilization Jihad and the Myth of Modern Islam. Let me tell you about the editing process. When I went through to get the book edited, I hired purposely a non-Christian person, an extremely liberal person, and she would write back, I can't support anything about your like of supporting Israel. Should get rid of all these references. Okay. But I'm not doing it. All right. She's getting upset because she's checking every source. I asked her to do that. Nobody can say anything you're saying is wrong because it's all directly getting angry. I can prove my point. But this story, she freaked out about. This lady lived in Seattle, Washington. Let me tell you the story. This is where she freaked out. She wrote back to me and said, you're writing about my neighborhood. I started to laugh. Maybe I shouldn't have. But as she said, nothing I could say could be proven wrong. 2005, North Seattle. Meadowbrook Pool created a Muslim women's swim time. Muslim women who follow Sharia were complaining that they could not swim because men could see them swimming or because pools were not allowing them to swim while clothed. This pool is part of the local government recreation services to its community. In keeping with its multiculturalism and a hope to create a safe environment for the Muslim women to relax, the North Seattle Meadowbrook Pool created a time just for women to swim. However, according to an article by Lornette Tumble of the Seattle Times, this meant more than just a time for them to swim. It meant sending all the male staff and all the male lifeguards home. No males could publicly swim at the same time. Then they used brown paper to cover the bottom two-thirds of the floor-to-ceiling glass, windows separating the front lobby from the 12-foot deep pool. Okay. Now, notice the focus is on making a safe place for women to practice their faith. It doesn't address how it's forcing others to comply. So the story behind this is a little more. They had this event a few months. Didn't last very long. Want to know why? There wasn't much interest. See, just like when you have an event, an opportunity to go swimming, women would like to interact with men, and men would like to interact with women. Those things happen. When there was open swims, there just wasn't enough need. So they do this to exert control. That was the entire thing that was happening here. It was done solely to exert control and show that they had control. All right. Let's talk about subject matter experts, SMEs. Carnegie Middle East Center director touts Al-Qaeda as an ally. Do you think that the government should ever hire this organization again? Do they say Al-Qaeda is an ally? They still do. How about this one? IPT exclusive. Qatar's insidious influence on the Brookings Institution. The Brookings Institution. Would you believe the Brookings Institution is constantly quoted as an authority on this, an authority on that? But they are highly influenced by Qatar's money. They're so highly influenced that they wouldn't give a lot of information on we had a couple authors write about the Islamic State. They wouldn't talk about the Muslim Brotherhood's connection to the Islamic State. No. They dropped a lot of that out. I was disgusted. I bought the book just to see what they would say. It was a sad, it had good details. But when it came to talking about the Muslim Brotherhood, they dropped the ball. Oh, money speaks. You're getting financed by them. You can't bite the hand that feeds you. To say, I have no respect for Brookings Institution. I would tell everybody to not give them a dime. In fact, if they say anything, it's not worth listening to. Same thing with this Carnegie Middle East Center. Anybody would support Al-Qaeda? Sorry, I have issues. No, if we have civilization. I'm sorry?
Perfectly understandable, and it's okay to speak up.
Yeah. And that's where we get into trouble. Not enough people are speaking up. And that's what got me doing this. People were not speaking up. So I learned this information, and nobody, at least nobody I knew of, was talking about this. And I couldn't figure out why. How can I be ahead of the FBI? I wasn't. Why aren't they telling people who the MSA is beyond my ability to grasp? Let's think about this. When I started to do this research, you know who was president? Obama. When I put this book out, you know who was president? Obama. So we have to expect that a civilization jihad is happening through government. You have to have people who agree to it. We'll call them as centaurs. And then you have, they're assenting to infiltration of their government. Then you have infiltrators. You have Hillary. She agrees to it. She approves it. Eric Holder agreed to it, approved it. John Brennan took Shahada in Saudi Arabia. Huma Abedin married a little wiener, not allowed to under Sharia law, but for the purposes of infiltration of government. Then you have, it's taken me a while, I have to come back and remember some of these names, just a sec. Wow, it's been a while. I can tell you it's been a long time if I can't remember some of these names. When I look at some of these things. Huma Abedin we had, I'll talk a little bit about that, but John Brennan, I mean, some of these you just sit there and go, why is this happening? Huma Abedin, she was the editor of the Journal of Muslim Minority Affairs 12 years before she ended up getting into office, and that was financed by Abdullah Omar Nassif, a wealthy Saudi financier of Al-Qaeda. Oh! So you have someone in office after 2001 that worked for an organization that had an offhand relationship to Al-Qaeda. Who approved the relationship? Could it be the Secretary of State, Hillary Clinton? Probably. Probably. It would also explain why Hillary Clinton, the Secretary of State, approved of a terrorist organization watching over our embassy and over the place in Libya that was taken down and attacked for 13 hours, where four men were murdered and tortured. She approved that directly. Keep thinking. There are so many people that what I ended up doing when I wrote this book is I took pictures of visitor logs that were online. You can see the amount of time these people actually visited the White House that are members of the Muslim Brotherhood, that are well-known members of the Muslim Brotherhood, that are proclaimed members of the Muslim Brotherhood so much that the news source, the Al-Rus, Yusuf Al-Rul, I'll say it right, an Egyptian news source, published the names of these connections to the Muslim Brotherhood, and they still continued to visit the White House almost daily. Some of them were there daily. I know this is a little small. I'll make this big for just a second. Benghazi, yes, thank you, Darcy. If President Obama was a member of the Muslim Brotherhood, you would expect him to obfuscate, to hide, to misinform. Well, President Obama, Barack Obama, addressing Hussein, President Barack Hussein Obama, addressed the Egyptians at Cairo University in Egypt in 2009. He said this: "As a student of history, I also know civilization's debt to Islam. It was Islam at places like Al-Azhar that carried the light of learning through so many centuries, paving the way for Europe's Renaissance and Enlightenment. No, it was innovation in Muslim communities." Oh, there's applause. Oh, wow. "It was innovation in Muslim communities that developed the order of algebra." No, it was. "Our magnetic compass, tools of navigation." No, it wasn't. "Our mastery of pens and printing." Okay, they had some calligraphy, but they weren't the first ones. The Chinese were. "Our understanding of how disease spreads." Really? Isn't Muhammad the guy who said you should eat both wings of a fly?
Yeah, and you can bathe and... dirty water.
Yeah. Oh, it's so disgusting. I get so creeped out every time I think about some of these things. But this is, yeah, that's kind of how you feel after saying, oh, it's so disgusting. And this was a sitting president of the United States, a Muslim Brotherhood guy who was obfuscating, and they got applause. This last few lines here. Islamic culture has given us majestic arches, soaring spires, timeless poetry and cherished music, elegant calligraphy, places of peaceful contemplation. Peaceful contemplation?
I'm sorry, cherished music?
See?
I do not call the ad man.
You're allowed to, the only music that is allowed is non-instrumental music, so it's people who are singing with no instruments. And that music may only be about the praise of Allah. Not a lot of things that you can do. Okay. And you can't be smiling and happy. And throughout history, Islam has demonstrated these words and deeds, the possibilities of religious tolerance. There's no tolerance under Islam. There's no racial equality. It says racial equality. That's hilarious. There's no racial equality under Islam. None.
Right. The listeners, please do your own research. Read the Quran and read the Hadith.
Yes.
You know, please.
And these things. So, again, obfuscation alert. Again, this, we have President Barack Obama addressing Egyptians. He says, I also know that Islam has always been a part of America's story. Really? The nation to recognize my country was Morocco. In signing the Treaty of Tripoli in 1796, our second president, John Adams, wrote that the United States has in itself no character of enmity against the laws, religion, or tranquility of Muslims. And since our founding, American Muslims have enriched the United States. They have fought in our wars. Since the founding? They didn't come here till the 1860s. Actually, late 1860s, past the Civil War. They have fought in our wars, really. They have served in our government just recently. They have stood for civil rights. Okay, civil rights, we have Malcolm X. Okay, give him some of that. They have started businesses. Okay, that's normal. They have taught at our universities. Now he's talking about the Muslim Brotherhood infiltration. They've excelled in our sports arenas. So does everybody else.
Oh, really? I've never heard of that.
Okay. All right. They've won Nobel Prizes. I think less than any other faith group. It's lower than any other faith group that I can think of. And when the first Muslim America was recently elected to Congress, he took the oath to defend our Constitution using the same Holy Quran that one of our founding fathers, Thomas Jefferson, kept in his personal library. Because he discovered how evil Islam was reading that book. And he talked about it. And that's what they took their president of the United States.
Yeah, it was lying. Literally,
blatantly lying. Yeah. So Islamic Society of Greater Houston, ISGH, publicly recognized and owned the North American Islamic Trust. That is the Muslim Brotherhood's, is part of ISNA. ISNA owns this. They own NAIT, the North American Islamic Trust. If you're part of this mosque, you get a free membership in ISNA, the Islamic Society of North America. Why? Because ISNA basically owns and runs NAIT, N-A-I-T, the North Atlantic Islamic Trust. That's a connection. And let me get back to my notes. Now, when I did this, this is one of my last pages, and I didn't realize we would be this close on time, so hold on a second. All right. So this is the question I like to leave people with: are we safer with more Muslims coming here? Again, I said this in 2016. Think about that. That was 6 years ago. An immigrant from Iran supposedly upset over not getting a promotion. Amarillo police said that an armed man who took two police hostage inside a local Walmart was a store employee who had a work-related dispute with a manager, and that there was no reason to believe the incident had any ties to terrorism. Police Sergeant Brent Barbie said the suspect, 54-year-old Mohammed Mohagadan, took his manager and another person hostage over a dispute related to a promotion. Barbie said the that Mogadon was a current employee at the Walmart store. Oh, yeah. Tell me. Yeah, he was supposed to take him as his friend and, you know, be all hunky-dory. That's really what was supposed to happen? Really? So I always left with this thought. Islam is not a religion. It is a political entity seeking to implement its laws everywhere, even here in America. Alex de Tocqueville wrote one of the most important books on American history. He said, "I studied the Quran a great deal. I came away from that study with a conviction that by and large there have been few religions in the world as deadly to men as that of Muhammad." He said this in 1843. I think Alex de Tocqueville, I probably his books, his work on democracy is probably one of the most important books that every American should read. This is shocking, shocking stuff. And when I gave these presentations, people just were shocked. They didn't know what to do. They were enraged. How are we allowing these things?
Mm-hmm.
Mm. Now,
Islam was around in the first president's time. Well,
didn't happen.
I should go back to 1635 and ask my ancestors.
I think it was actually the 1860s they came in. It was 1880s they came in. That was a mistake on my part. Yeah. 1880s. They didn't come here till the 1880s. So we have Obama obfuscating, which is hiding the truth. This is one of the reasons. I mean,
right. Yeah.
When you have this is a guy who had his law license revoked because of what he did as president.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Like I said, I should ask my ancestors because they were here by 1635.
Same here. My relatives came here on the second Mayflower. Yeah. And anybody who wants to can go to Plymouth and learn more. I do recommend doing that if you want to go back and learn American history. That is an entire great story itself. I recommend going to Boston and following the trail, Freedom Trail there. It is something that every American should experience. It's something you should take your children and go do. It is phenomenal. I did it with my youngest. It was just an incredible thing. I got to go with Boy Scouts, and that was before they were woke. Now I wouldn't let a child go there to a Boy Scout group. No. I have taken up a lot of time talking, and when I would finish this, and people they would ask questions, and they'd ask question after question after question, and I could give the answers most of the time, and I would get one person who would usually ask what I considered the all-important question: what should we do? My best answer in 2016 to do this: pass the American laws for American courts. Pass that in your state. Get it passed, which doesn't allow judges to implement Sharia. I live in Libland, New York State. Would you believe Sharia is used in family court of law in New York State? It is.
Oh.
Yeah. So if you're Muslim, they will allow you to use Sharia to make decisions. Problematic.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's all about stop from hurting the Muslims' feelings, you know.
And all of what I've been sharing Yeah, everything I've shared, you can find facts. You can, anybody who, if you ask for a copy of the book, you can find all the resources. They're still, they're still there. They're still linked. And if you can't find it, you go to archive.org. You'll find them there. So, I will say this. Some of the resources, I go back and I look. I learned the one stupid thing that I had done. That one of my friend who's also an author said, Sutliff, whenever you do you cite sources, you have to make sure you also register the sources with archive.org. So anybody can just go there and verify. There were a couple that got deleted, and I don't remember which ones those are. But again, this was published 2015 originally, published again in 2016. And you know, I was traveling the country, and it felt good. I went to Europe and handed out this book. I handed a copy of this book to a man I thought could be future president of France. I'm still waiting to see if he can. Yeah. One of the guys running for president of France has this book. Kent Ekroth, I gave a copy of it to him, and he's in Sweden. I gave copies of the book in Germany. I gave them away to politicians, and you know, and some of my colleagues that were there with me in 2016. You know, these are facts. All these things that I'm putting before you, these are actual facts that you can research and find out. My suggestion that I will tell you today. Read the Quran. I would tell everyone, don't throw it out. Read it. If you want help going through it because you find it difficult, come join us on the Dissecting the Quran series. It's generally on Fridays around 6. And come join us. We're going through it. We are in chapter 8. And we're going through the Quran verse by verse, something that every imam in the world is afraid to do. And yet, when you read the Quran, you'll find out why. My suggestion.
Boy, I can't say that enough.
read the Quran. You will find out why I'm saying the things I'm saying. Again, Alex de Tocqueville said, I studied the Quran a great deal. Thomas Jefferson had a Quran. He studied it a great deal. You know why? He sent people because he sent – the Marines were created because Thomas Jefferson read the Quran. We have the Marines who were called Leathernecks. Thomas Jefferson read the Quran. Yes, please. Thank you, XYZ. I think we will be on this Friday at 6. I'm kind of excited. So because we're going to be starting to hit some passages that I know quite well, and I'm kind of excited. I don't consider the Quran easy to read. And again, if you haven't read the Quran, pick it up, read it for yourself. You'll start to understand why. I do not recommend any translation outside of the Generous Quran, with one exception. There is the Critical Quran, and let's see if I can get it here. And this is out by Robert Spencer. All right, it's okay. I still like Usama's better. And there's various reasons for it. I consider Usama's translation more accurate. And the cool thing about Usama, always updating his. He believes, when you have a good man of honor, he's willing to make, he's willing to say, I make mistakes. And what he does is constantly fix and update and make it better. So he's actually hoping to do another update, and that should be coming out in the coming months. I'm not sure when he's expecting to get that out. And he has some other things that he's working on at the time. Thank you, Protestant believer. I do wish I caught this a few seconds ago. He wrote from the – let me just share this. Oh, outstanding. outstanding. From the halls of Montezuma to the shores of Tripoli. Thank you, Marines. Thank you, Marines. Thank you, thank you, thank you. My suggestion, be the person who finds the facts. Be the person who becomes the great resource for those around you. Be the person who speaks the truth. Be the person who shares the truth. And I will tell you the best thing you can do with all of that, give your life to Christ. There's nothing better than having Jesus as your Savior.
Amen.
And everything falls together after that. If you're a follower of Islam, leave Islam and find Christ. Thank you all for listening. God bless.
Thanks for a great show, Paul.
Thank you. Okay. Boy, I didn't think I would go that long. Yeah. And I went longer than what I had a hard time doing these presentations. I didn't know how to keep to a set time, which was hard for me.
Yeah.
I gotta take this. Sorry.
Okay,
bye. Hi. How you doing, Dad? Sorry, what?